Settle down, girl. Settle
Love
down,
Talk
girl.
Radio.
God, that British chick is loud.
This is also bad. Man using the magic power of the ancient runic symbols can call forth these powers of darkness. The demons of hell.
Too bad for this cheesy pod in this cheesy studio on our cheesy show. Good evening and welcome to Erie House Radio.
So much cheese, I got stopped up.
Yeah, like cheese whiz. All right, I'm Dale K from Spook Show. I'm here with
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here along with
ourselves.
Yeah.
Just us. For the moment, you never know. Garf sometimes drops in. CW could drop in any time. You never know.
Yeah.
Fog's Bane.
I have a complaint.
Hello, good old Bob. Thank you for joining us.
I have a complaint.
Gentlemen. Yep. Ugga boo, ugga. And stuff.
I still have a complaint.
You have a complaint?
Yeah. Why is it that I always get sent out on these danger assignments to go interview and interview demons in this case? How does it I always draw the short straw?
Well, you know, it's in the contract. Read it over the fine print that all dangerous work
man.
Is not covered by OSHA. Basically, you're on your own, pal. There'll be no disability claims for demon attacks.
I went into a deep, dark cavern to interview a real demon.
Cool. We'll be hearing that later on, I'm
and
sure,
this was
tonight.
Not even... Yeah. So, I survived. I'm back. And we'll be airing that transcribed feature later. Not even
All
a Dickie
right.
Goodman type interview. Dale, it's a real face to demon face interview.
Ooh, that'll be coming up later tonight. And just playing with my email, kids. We got two. Count them. Two. Terrific tales
Fog.
For you tonight.
Yep, Fox says double Dale's. Oh, Beelzebub Dave. Oh, yeah, Double Dave's Pay. That's the one I saw that I agreed with. Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Things got quiet on this end.
Beelzebub, Astaroth Dale. He's a real Astaroth. Is that not one of the other names for the evil one? I don't know.
I don't know. Beelzebub.
Beelzebub, that's Lucifer. What else?
Yeah,
he has
maybe.
A lot of nicknames. Old Hob.
He does.
I believe. Old
yeah.
Hob. Just popular guy.
Whatever name you want it to be.
And his minions are sometimes known as demons.
Yes, they are. Doing his bidding.
And let me tell you, they're not cute little minions like from those kids' movies. These minions are a little tough breed, and we got two great radio shows. Or Arch Obler plays. I like these. These are just as good as Lights Out.
This is kind of billed as a Lights Out, but it's not really a Lights Out, apparently.
It's a Lights Out that's not a Lights Out.
Yeah. It's billed
yeah,
as Lights
yeah,
Out, but it's from 1964. So Lights Out was done long before that.
Yeah, how modern.
The amazing Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Two terrifying tales tonight. Courtesy of Dave's Library. You should see it. It's huge. When we moved here into the
library.
Erie House.
Yeah, it took up a couple of rooms, yeah.
Yep. I almost had to move out of the basement.
For Yep. Thank goodness for digitization. Try and say that five times real fast.
Oh, amen. I still have a lot of vinyl that I'm going to probably just turn over to my son as soon as I get a few more things digitized. There's a couple little oddball rarities that I need digitized that I do not have yet.
Yeah, I have so much on vinyl that just isn't on CD anywhere. So, yeah, you have to digitize some of this stuff if I wish to keep it in the future.
Yeah. Let's see. Where will we start tonight?
Well, why don't we start with our old friend Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, we'll get a little dark. Just like last night, we'll get a little darker as we go along, other than the interview,
yeah.
I'm sure. now, this one's called The Death Barber. Who is our Sherlock Holmes tonight, Dave?
I'm pretty sure this is Nigel Bruce and Basil Rathbone. This has been just about the last year that Basil Rathbone portrayed Holmes.
Or as the man says,
he
Basil.
Was followed. Yep.
Basil.
Yeah, he was followed by Tom Conway, and then by a guy whose name I don't recognize, but sounded just like Basil Rathbone. So he
yeah.
was a Basil Rathbone impersonator. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy surprised me not too long ago. It might have not even been here. I could have been in my car. One of those weekends they gave me satellite for free. And
yep.
When I heard the credit, it's like, no, that's Basil. I thought I was listening to Basil. Nope, it was that other guy.
Because it caught me off guard the first time I heard one, Dale, because it sounded like Basil Rathbone, but it definitely wasn't Nigel Bruce. I said, now, I know Nigel Bruce did at least one, if not two, seasons of it on radio without Basil, but Basil Rathbone never did any season without Nigel Bruce. And so that really confused me. And then when I heard it, it was not Nigel Bruce, and it wasn't Basil Rathbone. Just really, wow.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I was imprinted by those Universal flicks, and honestly, Basil and Nigel are my Holmes and Watson. Those will always be mine.
Be mine.
And their first one, which was The Hound of the Baskervilles, was by far their best. I loved all of them, but that was their best. And that was the first time that Watson wasn't a completely bumbling idiot just there for basically comic effect.
Yeah.
So plus it's a great story.
I just love him as a bumbler. It adds character and doesn't detract from Sherlock Holmes.
No, but it detracts from Watson. Watson was a army doctor, had fought in Afghanistan. You know, you can't be a bumbling idiot and be an army doctor. Okay, well, maybe, but
yeah. You clearly never watched MASH.
trying to give the British a little bit more a credit there than that, so.
Well, Mighty Joe says it's probably time to get going with Sherlock Holmes, the Death Barber. I thought almost we were going to have a Sweeney Todd tale there for a minute.
I think it is Demon Barber. It is Demon Barber, isn't it? I think it's Demon Barber.
Demon Barber. All right, it's labeled funny here in the studio. No problem. Demon Barber it is.
I labeled it wrong, did I?
That's all right. Here's part one with Basil. And Nigel, and its original broadcast date is
January 28th, 1946.
Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now I'm sure our good friend Dr. Watson's waiting for us. Let's go enjoy.
There you are, Mr. Bartell.
Good evening, Doctor. All alone tonight, huh?
Yes, my boy, if you can call a man alone when he's got his pipe, his book, and a glass of good port at his elbow. Take your coat off. If we'll join me.
Thanks, Doctor.
Help yourself to the port. There's some rather special tobacco, a jar over there.
Fine. And now, Doctor, are you ready to tell us tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure?
I am, Mr. Bartell, and I think you'll find it a most unusual story. It began on a winter's night in 1896. Holmes and I had gone to a theatre in the East End of London to see a performance of a famous old English melodrama called Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
That's a good bloodthirsty title, Doctor. Demon Barber. He sounds as though he specialized in close shaves.
You gracious me, Mr. Bartell, that's almost unforgivable. He was a murderer of voracious appetite who placed his victims in a specially constructed barber's chair, cupped their throats, and then pressed a lever that would swing the chair over and decamp the unfortunate victim into a horrible cellar beneath his shop.
Well, this is only a stage play you're talking about, Doctor.
As my story begins, we were seated in a private box watching one of the closing scenes. Holmes was leaning forward in his chair, following the action on the stage with an obvious delight, while I sat beside him, equally engrossed. An actor by the name of Mark Humphreys was playing the part of Sweeney Todd, and no one could deny that he was playing it.
Where are you going, Tobias? To the nearest magistrate, Sweeney Todd? To denounce you as a fiendish, cruel, cold-blooded murderer.
You have pronounced your doom. Into the chair with you, and over and down into the depths below.
There. Whence comes this apparition? 'Tis the ghost of another customer of mine. The yawning grave yields up his ghastly inmates to prove me guilt. Dead will have dead. He is there. He comes to accuse me of his murder. Oh, save me! 'Twas not I that slew you. Let me leave, or it will kill me. Let me leave!
Well, upon my soul, Holmes, that fellow Mark Humphreys is the most florid actor that I've ever seen on a stage.
I find him enchanting, Watson. It seems to me he's really caught the flavor of this murderous monsterpiece. After all, a restrained performance of the Barber Sweeney Todd would be unthinkable.
Yes, I suppose it would. I must say his makeup seems rather overdone. No barber would wear such an enormous beard. It'd be most impractical. Probably get in the customers' faces. By the way, I noticed from the program that Mark Humphreys, as well as being the principal actor, is also the owner of the company.
Yes, the current trend towards the actor-manager is a healthy sign, I think. Come in.
Excuse me, but is one of you gentlemen Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, I am.
I was asked to give you this note.
Thank you.
Now, who on earth knows that you're at the theater, Holmes?
We'll soon find out. Ah, this note is from Mark Humphreys, our actor-manager.
What's
it say? Dear Mr. Holmes, I recognize you in your box. Please come to my dressing room after the performance. My sanity, and even the safety of London, perhaps, depends on your compliance.
Oh, my sanity and the safety of London. I wonder what on earth he means.
That, my dear fellow, we can only discover by going backstage to meet him. As it is, the curtain's going up in the last scene, I see. For a little longer, we must possess our souls in patience.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, sir?
Oh, my name is Lindsay. Derek Lindsay. I'm the business manager. Mr. Humphreys asked me to meet you at the stage door and take you to his dressing room.
Thank you very much. And this is my colleague, Dr. Watson.
How do you do?
Oh, how are you, Doctor? Will you follow me, please?
Excuse me asking, Mr. Lindsay, but surely you must be related to that distinguished actor of some years back, Lytton Lindsay.
He was my father, Mr. Holmes.
Ah, indeed. The resemblance is extraordinary.
With such a heritage, Mr. Lindsay, you must love the theater.
It'll probably sound like heresy, but I hate it. However, it's the only thing I was trained for, and there's good money to be made in it, sometimes. And money's a thing I both like and want. Oh, Mr. Holmes, I do hope you'll be able to help Mark Humphreys. He certainly needs it.
Well, I know what seems to be his trouble.
Well, he'll have to tell you that for himself. But his wife and I think... There's Mrs. Humphreys now. Maria! Maria, this is Mr. Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. Mrs. Mark Humphreys.
How do you do?
Oh, Mr. Holmes, I'm so grateful that you're going to see Mark. He's in such a dreadful state. There have been times lately when Mr. Lindsay and I have been afraid he's going out of his mind, haven't we, dear?
Indeed we have. We're both dreadfully worried about
him. In that case, I hope I can be of service. Which is his dressing room?
Number one, next door to mine. Derek, I think it'll be better if Mr. Holmes and Dr. Watson go in alone. I'm sure Mark will speak more freely if we're not in the room.
I think perhaps that is a good idea, Mrs. Humphries. We'll see you later on. Come on, Belle.
That's all right.
Come in. Thank heaven you're here. Close the door.
Now, Mr. Humphries, this is Dr. Watson.
Watson, eh? Yes, I know of you, too.
How do you do, sir?
Sit down, won't you, gentlemen? You're wondering why I asked you to come back and see me, of course.
Naturally, sir.
Well, I won't beat about the bush and waste your time. I come straight to the point. I'm going mad.
I know, it sounds fantastic,
but it's true. I've often heard of actors beginning to live their parts off the stage. They play on it. Well, it's happened to me. I'm turning into another Sweeney Todd, the character I'm portraying on the stage.
Are you suggesting, sir, that you're a potential murderer?
Yes, I am.
What reason do you have for holding that belief?
Reason? Listen to this. 3 times in the past week, I've wakened in the morning to find my boots covered with mud and my razor stained with blood.
You've had no recollection of any untoward events during the night?
None.
Have you ever been addicted to the unfortunate habit of sleepwalking, sir?
Not my knowledge, Doctor. And if I had been, surely my wife would have told me about
your
it.
Your wife? Where do you live, Mr. Humphries?
We have a flat here above the theatre.
Above the theatre, eh? And Mr. Humphries, you say that on 3 separate occasions on waking in the morning, you have found a blood-stained razor and mud-covered boots. Can you show us this proof?
No, I can't. I was always so frightened that my wife would see that I cleaned them before she had the opportunity of finding them.
But dear sir, they would have been very valuable clues in a case like this.
I couldn't risk my wife seeing evidence like that, Doctor. She'd know the truth. But at night times, while she's asleep, some devilish, unconscious urge has overcome me. An urge that causes me to prowl the streets of London, razor in hand, looking for a victim. Mr. Holmes, you've got to help me. I'm certain that without doing it, I've been committing murder, and if you don't help me, I'll go on and on.
Mr. Humphries, please. I'll undertake the case. It's a very unique assignment. In effect, I'm being engaged by a possible murderer to prove him guilty.
Well, Mr. Holmes, I've been through all the records we have here at Scotland Yard.
What have you found, Inspector Gregson?
The last 2 months, we haven't had one case of an unsolved killing with a razor.
Any mysterious disappearances, Inspector?
Oh, bless your heart, Doctor. There's never a day that passes without one or two of them. Here's a list of them, Mr. Holmes, if it's any use to you.
Thanks. Come on, Watson. In the morning, we can go back to the theatre and set our friend's mind at rest. I'm much obliged to you, Gregson.
Glad to be of service, Mr. Holmes.
We examined the homicide records at Scotland Yard after leaving you last night, Mr. Humphries. There have been no unsolved razor murders in London during the past fortnight.
And therefore, I think you may rest easy on that score, sir.
But it proves nothing. Remember that in the play, Sweeney Todd's victims are never found either.
Yes, thanks to his singularly horrible ingenuity in disposing of them. But this is real life, Mr. Humphries.
Then how do you account for the bloodied razors and the muddied boots?
Well, now, are you sure that they aren't just in your imagination, sir? You admit that your wife's never seen them. The whole thing could be, shall we say, an overdose of Sweeney Todd.
Well, I admit that I'm suffering from a surfeit of that.
And why not drop the play from your repertoire?
Our manager, Derek Lindsay, won't let me. He's our best moneymaker. He's always got a keen eye to business. Mr. Holmes, I can see that you still don't believe my story. So I've saved some evidence for you, evidence that I found this morning. Look at these. Now what do you say? You still think it's my imagination?
Cutter, blood-stained razor, and boots covered with mud.
Splendid. At last, some real clues to work on.
How can you be so calm, Holmes? It happened again last night. Do you realize that I'm a murderer? I'm a menace to society? For heaven's sake, lock me up before I do some more damage.
No, sir. Don't get so excited.
Mr. Humphries, I should like to take these objects back to Bay Street where I can perform some chemical tests. You have no objections, I hope?
Objections? Good heavens, no.
Excellent. You've told no one of this fresh discovery of yours.
No one. Not even Derek Lindsay.
Derek Lindsay, that's your manager, isn't it?
Yes. The best friend I ever had. Except for his father before him. It was Derek who helped me back on my feet. Two years ago. When I put on that disastrous production of Macbeth. Then I'd be today if it went for him.
You lost a great deal of money on that production, sir.
Nearly every penny I had.
Indeed. By the way, where is your wife, for some reason?
She's in her dressing room next door. We have a matinee today, you know.
I'd like a word with her. What's no chap? Wait here for me, will you? I won't be a moment.
Right, you are, Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes.
You want to talk to me, Mr. Holmes?
For a moment. May I come in, Mrs. Humphreys?
Well, wouldn't we talk on the stage? It's empty.
I'd prefer to come into your dressing room, if you don't mind. What I have to say is confidential.
Very well, then. Come in. Mr. Holmes, may I introduce Signor Vanelli, our musical director?
How do you do, sir?
It is a great honor to meet the so great Signor Holmes. I have so admired you. Oh, often I have envied you. Many times I say to myself, Miss Nepsey,
Signor Vanelli, if you don't mind, I wish to speak to Mrs. Humphreys alone.
Oh, I quite understand. Excuse me, Signor. Adios, Anna Maria.
Mr. Holmes, I'm really awfully glad of this opportunity to talk to you. Tell me truthfully, please, what's your opinion of my husband?
I haven't formed a definite opinion yet. Except that it's possible that he's the victim of a fraud, I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions, if you don't mind.
Of course not, Mr. Holmes.
Has your husband ever shown evidence of being a sleepwalker?
A sleepwalker? Oh, no, never.
I see. Are you a light sleeper?
Yes, I am. Exceptionally so. Hi.
Oh, I'm just curious.
You're being very mysterious, Mr. Holmes. Can't you tell even me what's going on?
I promised your husband the answer to that question before tonight's performance. I'm afraid I can't tell you any more until then.
And now may I ask a question?
Oh, certainly. No, I won't promise to answer it.
You said just now that my husband might be the victim of a fraud. What did you mean?
Again, I'm afraid that you must wait for the specific answer to that question. However, there's another fraud being practiced on him that I can speak of now.
What fraud?
The fraud that you are indulging in, Mrs. Humphreys.
What do you mean?
Of course, this particular fraud is none of my business, but when I almost force my way into your dressing room and find your musical director, a quantity of rice powder on one shoulder and suggestions of rouge on his cheek, it doesn't take a great deal of intelligence to deduce that your husband is being deceived.
Get out of here, at once.
That's exactly what I propose doing. Good day to you, madam. No doubt I shall see you later on.
Well, Holmes, what does the microscope tell you about the mud on the boots and the bloodstains on the razor?
It's on a bank on the mud, old chap. It's in the common type that is found in most parts of London.
And the blood?
I'm examining that now.
The strangest case as ever I remember, Holmes. Here you are trying to prove a man innocent when he insists that he's guilty.
By George, Watson! Here's the answer.
What?
This blood is definitely not human blood. It's probably canine. Now, a Sweeney Todd Mathis would hardly drive its victim to kill dogs. Therefore, it's obvious that Mark Humphreys is the victim of a devilish plot.
And he's not a murderer.
No, come on, old fellow. Let's go to the theater at once and give him the good news.
Why doesn't he answer? 3/4 of an hour before the time.
Oh, he must be in his dressing room. I'll knock again. Come on, Watson, let's go in.
Holmes, look. Look, he's thumped over his dressing table.
I hope we're not too late. Here, give me a hand with him.
We are too late. His throat's been cut.
Poor devil. I promised him a solution to his troubles before the night was over. Little did I think that the solution would be death.
Hey, Dave, I got to know, what does a barber's butler do?
I don't know. I think freshen up the towels and keep them warm.
Okay. Sweep the hair off the floor.
Keep them warm. Yeah, that kind of a thing. Yeah.
Okay. I might apply for that job myself.
But
that or shoveling out the stables.
I got to wonder, they did what? Nearly a dozen movies in what, 7 or 8 years?
Yeah.
I wondered how many of these broadcasts they did. I looked up, from what I can tell, Looks like Nigel Bruce and Basil Rathbone did 206 of these radio programs from 1939
to 1946. And you're
going to
hear them all right here.
At least those that are available, yeah. Yep. I just, it's just amazing the love for Sherlock Holmes that went into these through the late 30s into the 40s. The first one that I know of, it probably was one before that, the first one that I know of was Orson Welles from the Mercury Theater in the Air portraying Sherlock Holmes. I think he played more out of the L, so he usually played more than one role in those. And then there was a continuation of this until almost 1950. Then in the mid-1950s, you had John Gielgud and Sir Ralph Richardson carrying a series on the BBC back in 64 on BBC. And there was another series of them even later than that. So radio has always had a love affair with Sherlock Holmes.
And now so do we. And just stick around because we're going to play every single one of them. and all the suspense and all the... Oh, jeez. We're going to have to live to be 150.
At least. At least.
This is Dale Methuselah Kay here along with...
Dave Zombie Binkley.
And Gar is,
yeah.
Well, still the ghoul.
He is still a ghoul, yes. In the chat right now, getting ready for his own show that will happen at 8 p.m. As we go off air, he'll be going on.
Yeah. Going to them there twitches and twitch away. Twitch, twitch. Yeah.
And don't forget to hang around in between our two shows. We're going to have a real live interview I did with a demon down in the deep, dark cavern. So,
yeah, that'll be after the final segment of Sherlock Holmes, a real live dead interview.
Yes. Because can demons really be real live?
yes and no. Live on the air, dead on the air at the same time.
That's talent. And they don't get double paid for it. You know, that's the even neater trick.
Yeah, I'm not paying them either. If I'm not paying you, the hell if I'm paying anybody else. Especially damn demon. All right.
So, yeah, getting back to Sherlock
Holmes. So Sweeney Todd did work his way into this story. That's cool.
He did, and now the actor's got his throat slashed.
Now, Dave, have you seen both movie versions of Sweeney Todd, the old 1935 version that's in public domain?
I did see that, and I did host one of his other movies, Face in the Window. I haven't hosted that one yet. Actually, I wanted to do that one at a barber shop. I thought that would be cool, fun.
Have you seen the Johnny Depp, Helena Bonham Carter version?
That was the musical version, right? I think I saw part of it. I didn't get to see the whole thing.
Ooh, it gets a little morbid
like
at the
Depp.
End.
Yeah, I like Johnny Depp. He just looks at everything so differently than any other actor I've really seen.
Well, he's
truly
an odd bird.
Some people try to
bird.
Delve into their roles. Yeah.
He is an odd bird.
It makes him an artist, I think. You know, artists truly look at things differently through a different lens. And he has done some. I guess when he did that Pan movie, you know, he was really going wacko on it. And even in The Lone Ranger, he played that old Indian. And I thought he was fabulous in that. And Disney supposedly lost a ton of money. I don't know how, because it wasn't like that was a real expensive looking movie, but but I enjoyed his portrayal in there as that old Tonto.
Yeah, I have to check that one out.
Track
that
when
I
he was trying
seen.
To tell stories. It is worth the watch. If you can separate that from the real thought of The Lone Ranger, which it took me a little while to do, but I looked at it more as a Johnny Depp movie, and he was Tonto, so I looked at it more as a Tonto movie than a Lone Ranger movie, so I was able to accept it. But it's funny because he would be telling the story, he kind of get lost in the middle of it, have to go back and and restart part of the story again. It's hilarious, I thought.
Good stuff. Johnny Depp is the Green Hornet. Why not? Let's wrap up.
Yeah.
Sure. Let's wrap up Sherlock Holmes, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street. How neat.
Well, Dr. Watson, what happened next?
Well, I think I'll pick up the story exactly where I left off. Holmes and I were standing in Mark Humphrey's dressing room, looking with horror at the flashed throat of the actor manager. There were bitter, self-accusing notes in Holmes's voice.
I promised him a solution to his troubles before tonight was over. Little did I think that solution would be death.
This worry over his supposed madness caused him to commit suicide.
Suicide? Rubbish, old fellow. It's murder.
Look at the razor clutched in his hand.
Undoubtedly placed there by the murderer, or rigor mortis, a chance to set in. In any case, scrutinize the wound. Does that look as if it had been done by the hand of a suicide?
Oh, I don't see why not.
Look close, old chap. The depth of the wound is even, whereas a suicide cut always wavers towards the end. No, this is murder, Watson, and I think I know who did it. But I have little evidence. I must lay a trap.
What kind of a trap?
I haven't time to kill you now, fellow. Every moment counts. Off with you to Scotland Yard and get Inspector Gregson. Bring him back here as fast as you can.
Right you are.
And Watson.
Yes?
Tell absolutely no one except Gregson of Mark Humphrey's death. Say that he's still alive, well, and that his problems are solved.
It's the performance of the play.
Don't you worry about that, old chap. Off with you to Scotland Yard.
I'm sorry it took so long to find me, Dr. Watson. I was out on another case.
No, that's all right, Inspector. The performance, if there is one, must be nearly over by now.
Here's the stage door, sir.
Yes, here we are.
Here, you can't go on the stage.
Who says I can't? I'm Inspector Gregson of Scotland Yard.
Oh, sorry.
Performance is going on. I wonder who the devil's playing Sweeney Todd. Come along, come on. Let's just stand here in the wind.
Quietly.
But this is impossible. There's Mark Humphreys on the stage. I saw him with his throat cut.
I don't believe in ghosts, Doctor.
Great heavens, it's Holmes.
Like that. Who's this? Ah, it's you, Mrs. Lovett. Somebody seems to cut your throat. What a pity. No more. You'll find. Don't see me try to cut your throat. Here he is. You'll cut their throat, too. He'll revenge you while you burn down there in hell, dearie. He'll revenge you.
Here he comes.
Now, Gregson, amazing disguise. I'd never have recognized him.
You're both here.
Holmes, and what are you up to?
Surely that's apparent. I disguised myself as the dead man, hoping to force the murderer's hand.
You're running a terrible risk, Mr. Holmes.
Part of my profession, Gregson. Here comes Signor Vanelli, the musical director.
My dear fellow, I had to leave the orchestra pit to come and congratulate you. Never have you given a finer performance. Bravissimo, bravissimo.
Thank you.
But it is true. You hardly seem the same person. Your performance is incomparable. Keep it up, Mark. Keep it up.
I think he spotted you, Holmes.
Yes, sir. I didn't like his look as he said that.
Well, whoever it is, they've got their hand soon. It's going up in the last scene. Keep your eyes open and suspect everyone.
I know how he remembers the lines, though, even if he has to play half a dozen times. Here he comes now. Hello, Holmes. You did splendidly.
But it didn't work, Watson. It didn't work, confound it. Murderer still hasn't dipped his hand. Have I underestimated him?
Looks as if you have, sir. And if you don't mind my saying so, I think you'd have been a lot wiser to let me handle the case as soon as you found his body, instead of going in for all this dressing up stuff.
Oh, but of course. Now I see it. Only one person could have killed Mark Humphreys.
Who, Holmes?
Do as I say and I'll show you. I'm going to Humphreys' dressing room now, alone. Give me a few moments' start and then follow me. Out of sight, but with earshot.
Dr. Watson, why does Mr. Holmes always have to be so blooming mysterious? Why can't he just say who the murderer is and take us to him?
Well, I've been with Mr. Holmes on a great many cases, Gregson, and yet I can't answer that question. Come along. He's got a big enough start now. Let's follow him.
I'm very fond of Mr. Holmes, you know, Doctor, and yet there are times when I get so angry with him. He shouldn't risk his life like that.
Well, you know, Mr. Holmes, he'll never change.
Well, if he don't, one of these days he's going to wake up and find himself dead. Someone inside with him.
You devil, Humphreys! How many times do I have to kill you?
Great Scottish, Derek Lindsay, the business manager. Come along, Gregson. No, Lindsay!
You succeeded in killing Humphreys, but you won't kill me.
Grab his arm. Look out for that freezer.
Here, you.
Let go of me!
No, you
no. Ah, very neat, Gregson.
Are you all right, Holmes?
Perfectly, thanks, old chap, though I'm a little tired. Gregson, my dear fellow, will you take over from here? I think I've had enough melodrama for one day. Pleasant, Watson, Mr. Dacre of Baker Street again, a crackling fire, my dressing gown, and your company combined to make a soothing ending to a somewhat violent day.
That's been the most unusual case, Holmes. I still don't entirely understand it. The original thought, of course, was to try and drive Mark Humphreys mad by making him think that he was a murderer. Had a cut for the boots and the blood-stained razor.
Precisely, my dear fellow. And the killer, having conditioned his victim by this trickery, then murdered him, trying to make it appear a suicide. Now, who had a motive?
Three people. Mrs. Humphreys, her lover, Signor Vanelli, and Derek Lindsay. I must say that I suspected the wife.
Well, so did I for a while, and yet it was illogical. She knew, and we may therefore presume that her lover knew, that I was suspicious of her.
And she must have known that you promised her husband a solution to his troubles before the night was out. It seems highly improbable that she or Signor Vanelli would have faked his suicide at that point.
Quite right, my dear fellow. So I investigated Derek Lindsay's affairs, and I found that what Humphreys had referred to as the kindly act of a friend in helping him back onto his feet was in reality the mortgaging of his entire theatrical effects. Lindsay stood to inherit the theater on Humphreys' death. Therefore, I was convinced that he was the killer.
And then, after he'd murdered him, he saw what he thought to be Mark Humphreys on the stage.
Ah, that's where I was slow and stupid, old chap. I couldn't imagine what motive gave the cold, clear nerve to suppress all reactions when he saw his supposed victim revived on the stage. Only at that moment did I realize.
And what was the motive that made him hold his hand?
The characteristic that ruled his life, Watson. Avarice. A morbid love of money. You see, if he'd attacked me during the performance, he'd have had to refund the money to the audience. His greed conquered all other passions. It made him wait until the performance was finished before he attempted my life.
You know, Holmes, now that the case is solved, I'll tell you something in confidence.
Please do, old fellow. What is
it? At the end of the play tonight, I was afraid that you'd made a mistake, that you'd slipped up on the case. Gregson thought so, too.
And I, Watson, will tell you something in confidence.
Oh, what is it?
There were three of us that felt the same way.
Now you're being modest, no?
I assure you one, my dear chap. In fact, in the future, if it should strike you that I'm more well, getting a little overconfident of my powers, or perhaps giving less pains to a case than it deserves, kindly whisper, Sweeney Todd, in my ear, will you? I shall be infinitely obliged to you.
Doctor, that was a swell story. And a pretty narrow escape for Holmes.
Yeah. He said he almost solved the case too late. Fortunately, it ended well.
Mm-hmm. The thing that sticks in my mind is the fact that this is one of the very rare occasions when Holmes almost made a serious mistake.
Well, we all make mistakes at times, don't we? Doctor, I said we all make mistakes at times.
I suppose so.
You mean to stand there and tell me that you never make a mistake?
Well, not when it comes to choosing a wine, I don't, because I always choose Petri.
Bartell, you trapped me again.
Could be. But honestly, Doctor, when you choose a Petri wine, you know it's a good wine. Well, Dr. Watson, do you care to give us a clue about next week's Sherlock Holmes adventure?
Well, let me see. Next week, Mr. Bartell, next week now. Yes, I'm going to tell you a colorful story that took place in the Parisian circus in 1890. It concerns a very important personage, a lady bareback rider, and
strange death. That warning.
Oh, boy, I can't miss that one, Doctor.
Good. Well, now, before you go, I want to say something to all our friends. I want you just to think for a minute. Think of how terrible it is to see helpless little children stricken by infantile paralysis. And then realize that infantile paralysis can be beaten. It can be beaten in very many cases. And your money, your dimes, can do it. Join the March of Dimes. Send your dimes to your local March of Dimes headquarters. Let's help little children walk. Help them live.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure was written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in Mr. Arthur Conan Doyle's story, The Yellow Face. Music is by Dean Fossler. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Booth through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studio. This is Harry Martell saying good night for the Petri family. For a solid hour of exciting mystery dramas, listen every Monday on most of these same stations at 8 o'clock to Michael Shane, followed immediately by Sherlock Holmes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents a Garless with Gar moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, if the only barber you have available is a demon barber, I have one suggestion. Long hair. Here you go.
I think I have that down pat. I got that long hair thing. I got that done, yeah.
There you go. Yep, got to stay away from those demon barbers. I don't know if you want to give me an intro for this interview or not, Dale. Do you want to? It's up to you.
I got something here. I got something.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's not it. Ladies and gentlemen, straight from the depths of Hades.
Here we go. This is Dave Binkley, reporting for Eerie House Radio, here in this deep, dark cavern. I'm here with this demon. How long have you been a demon? Okay, was there any other demons you were trying to emulate when you were a young demon to become where you are today? Okay, well, why is it that you live in this deep, dark cavern anyway? Yeah, I guess I can see that. Is there any demon tricks that you do on a regular basis that really kind of gives you any kind of pleasure, if a demon can have pleasure? Well, I guess that's about all we can get out of this. Well, I guess this is Dave returning you to Eerie House Radio, the interview here in a deep, dark cavern. Thank you, demon.
Sounds like he got his eloquence from the witch doctor.
Tasmanian devil, yeah.
Or something, yeah.
I think my wife thought I was having a seizure up here or something, but oh well.
Oh, God. That's funny. Not the seizure, but I mean that she thought it. Seizure, not so funny.
She stayed downstairs where it was safe. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't blame her. It's a little creepy, Dave. A little creepy.
Oh, just kind of a strange idea that went through my head and didn't stop, unfortunately, for you guys.
That was fine. Nice. I hope you didn't get burned too much down there. And
No.
Since you went down there, now we're going to have a visitor from Hades. Yeah, that's our tale from Arch Ogre Plays coming up next.
Yep. Good old Arch Ogre. Boy, I'd love to crawl up in his brain sometime. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, quite a tale spinner.
Talk about a scary place. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, but he did a lot of good morality plays. He did some really dark stuff, and he's done some really upbeat stuff. Good judge of human nature, I think.
Well, he also wrote that Adam and Eve sketch that got Mae West thrown off of radio for 30, 40 years. So, yeah. He was not beyond writing comedy, along with all the nightmarish stuff that he could come up with. And his movies were totally unique. He was the first one in the U.S. to work out a 3D movie and then the studios wouldn't even really have to change their cameras or anything, you know, to show it. But we're fine with the way it is. Yeah.
Would you say he not only did that, but he also penned the first post-apocalyptic film, at least the first one I know of, because it's 1950, the movie Five.
Yeah, I think it very well could have been. There were some stories somewhat about apocalypse, maybe before that in science fiction, like Mysterious Traveler or something like that, but as far as movies go, I think you're right. I think he may have had one of the first ones.
First of note that I can think of. And, of course, he resurrected, so to speak, Lights Out with this program.
Yeah. A couple of times in the 60s, it was basically more like Arch Ogre Plays. And then in the late 60s, actually, I think it was the early 70s, he did re-released several of them as The Devil and Mr. O. And basically because he had all the rights to all of his stories and all the recordings that he made, but he didn't have rights to the Lights Out name, which is why he had to go with Arch Ogre Plays and with The Devil and Mr. O.
Well, thank goodness he kept cranking stuff out in any fashion he could, and we've got a good one for you tonight. Again, The Visitor from Hades, originally broadcast on
October 10th, 1964.
And now, Lights Out. Arch Ogre's Plays. Stories of the unusual.
Hello, this is Arch Ogre. Now, why does a playwright write a play? Well, take this one you're going to hear. Was it because I heard the neighbors in a knockdown, drag-out fight, or was it because I had a few words with my own little helpmate? Well, you'll never know except to listen and guess.
And now, Arch Ogre's strange play, The Visitor from Hades.
So, all right, shut the window. A little quiet we'll have.
Want me to suffocate?
Suffocate? 42 years now I've lived in the Bronx. Do I look like I suffocate? Oh, come on, Dora. Be nice. We'll have quiet and we'll talk.
All right.
Yeah, better. So come, sit down, Dora. Come on, sit and we'll talk.
I don't know if I want to talk about it anymore.
Now, don't talk like something without a head. Why shouldn't you talk? Good reason. I'm sick of it. So if you're sick inside, God forbid you see a doctor. If you're sick in the head, you talk to me. Who's better you should talk to than your own mother, even if only by marriage? He makes me sick. News, you're telling me he makes you sick? Listen, darling. For 30 years, Sam's papa made me so sick, even to look at him, I used to close my eyes like you close from a piece of dirt flies in your eyes.
He's good-looking enough.
Washington. And not even Washington by the president. Washington, Washington he has to run away to. A traveler in the family.
Not with me, he won't.
Not with himself either. Now, believe me, it's up to you, Dora.
Fighting all the time. If you knew how sick I was of it.
So bad at fighting and getting what you want, believe me. The door.
Yes, I heard.
Now, if it's Sam.
Sam, at 4:10? Yeah, him and a bank president.
Mister in a hurry, whoever it is.
Just the superintendent. And he fixed the light in the bathroom. All right.
Sam? Dora? Is it Sam?
Yes, Ma, it's Sam.
Now, Sam, don't start anything.
Well, what should he start? With his own mama he should start.
Ma, I thought I asked you to stay away from Dora when I'm not here.
Sam, I tell you, don't start that again.
Mama, answer me. Didn't I ask you to stay away?
Mamas who aren't welcome by their daughters in marriage I've heard of. But an own son
who
wouldn't...
Now, don't get melodramatic, Ma. All I'm asking is that you don't see Dora when I'm not around. We had that understanding,
Sam,
didn't we?
Sam, you stop.
Why should I stop?
All right. So both stop. I got a home. I'll go.
Oh, Ma, for Pete's sake, why can't you talk real?
No, I don't want to talk. I don't want to stay.
Oh, goodbye. I talk to you tomorrow, darling.
All right.
And don't forget that I told you. New York is good enough.
Of course, Mother. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
New York's good enough for what?
For you.
So she has been at it again. Dora, why won't you listen to me? She isn't right for you, my Ma.
Maybe I haven't heard that one.
Then hear it again because it's true. All her life, everything she's done's been wrong. My Pa, he was a swell guy, but she ruined him and his business. The way she's trying to ruin you and me.
Little boy's getting excited.
Listen, she ran him and his life. What he should do, not do, she breathed for him. And pretty soon he was glad to die. Believe me, glad to die.
Stop yelling at me. The neighbors hear you all right half as loud.
The devil with the neighbors. They don't have to stand 10 hours a day in that sweatshop. I do.
If you had what it takes, you wouldn't have to work for other people. You'd have a place for yourself.
I'd have a place for myself if you'd stop spending every nickel a week before I make it.
I got a right to live, have fun, ain't I? Can I help it? I'm married. A dumb jerk can't make a decent living.
Don't say those things. I warned you.
I said them yesterday. I'll say them now. I'll say them again. You're a jerk.
Dora, stop
it. A big, empty-headed jerk.
Stop it, I tell you.
Your mom's right. She's always right. The only way to treat a jerk like you is to spend every cent you make just as fast as you make it.
Dora, I'm telling you.
So you can keep on.
I'm telling you, Dora.
You're a jerk. A jerk. A jerk.
Stop it.
A jerk like your pa was.
Don't say that, my pa.
A jerk. You're mocked.
Dora, stop it.
A fat-headed jerk who never reminds
me. All right, I'll stop you.
A jerk.
Sam, hands. Don't.
Dora.
Dora.
I didn't mean to. Stop looking at me like that. I didn't know what I was. But my hands. Don't blame me. Blame yourself. My pa. The things you said, you wouldn't have said that if you knew him. He was good. His face was so thin and quiet, and when my ma'd start in on him for nothing, I tell you. His eyes were like a dog. You kicked. That's why I wouldn't stand your saying those things. Not about my pa. What you say about me, all right. I'm used to them. First my mother used to, now you. But not about him. You understand? Not about him. Well, don't stand there holding your neck looking at me. Say something.
I hate you.
All right. And I hate you.
So much. I could kill you.
And I you.
Window. The dining room.
So who cares?
But a window broke, didn't you hear it?
Well, that'll break up the house.
Oh, Sam. Oh, I'll go myself.
Oh, kids. I told the superintendent to keep him off the street. If he thinks I'll pay for the glass, he's got to... Sam!
Huh?
Sam! Come here.
What's the matter? What's the matter with you? What?
Sam! Look!
What? Oh, no.
Sam.
What?
Sam.
What do you...
Sam.
Stop saying my name like that. Over and over for the last 5 minutes. Why do you do that?
Who? What?
I don't know. I don't.
Make it go away. Make it go away, Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. My flat. You. What do you want here? Who are you? Get out of here. Do you hear me? Get out of here.
I'm getting out of here. I'm getting out.
No, Dora, wait.
No, no, let go of me. I'm getting out of here.
Dora, stop. Get your feet. Get up. Don't move.
Sam, where is he?
He's sitting down in front of the door.
If I could scream. But I'm afraid he... The police. Sam, call the police.
Yeah, the police. I'll call. No. How can I?
Well, don't stand there. The telephone.
You stop.
Try. You've got to.
Right. All right, but walk alongside of me.
I feel so dizzy.
Just another couple of steps.
His eyes.
Oh, the telephone.
Quick.
Operator.
Silas.
Oh, yeah.
Quick.
How can I until the operator... Hello, operator.
Tell her, Sam.
Operator, please get me the police, quick. Some came into our house. Well, something.
Sam, he's getting up again.
Police, operator. The police.
Sam, hang up.
The police.
Hang up, Sam. He don't like it. Sam.
Dora, you're crazy. Why did you tear him out of my hand?
Don't like it.
Look.
Oh, Sam, don't let him.
No. It's all right. Just stand quiet. Squad car will get here. A couple of minutes, Dora. A
couple of minutes. Like a couple of years. Oh, Sam, listen. Why can't we break a window, get the neighbors in? We won't be alone. They won't be scared. They'll get him.
Please.
Tell him.
I can't. My throat.
Now go away. Come in. Come in quick.
Did you say I could come in? All right, I'm in.
Sam, the superintendent's kid.
Hey, something's the matter.
Get out of here, quick!
Huh?
Don't stand there. Get out of here, quick!
Well, you said I could come in.
Go. Do as I tell you. Go quick before I...
Dora, wait.
What?
Let me talk to her. I got to.
Oh, gosh.
What's the matter with you two? Look at me as if I was something in a zoo or something.
Arlene, tell me. Keep your voice down. Why did you come in here?
I knocked first. Sure I did. I knocked.
No. Why did you come up here?
Well... My pa was busy. He told me to come up and tell you. He called the plumbers, and they said they'd be over as soon as the agent okayed the job. So my pa said to tell you.
No, wait. That doesn't matter. What I want to know is...
Sam, he's watching her now.
Gee, Mr. Crook. Is she sick?
She's looking right at him.
Mr. Crook, what's the matter?
Can't you see?
No, I don't.
Oh, gosh.
You do see.
Well, I'll say I do.
Gee, will Pa be sore? What are you talking about?
My Pa, will he be sore, that busted window?
Window?
Yeah, he says it's bad enough the extra work he's got to do around here without climbing around putting in windows the kids break.
Don't you see?
Sure I see. Gosh, you think I'm a dope or something? Well, I'll go down and tell my Pa. Oh, wait a minute.
Well?
How could the kids break a window up here in your flat? I mean, it's the fifth floor.
Oh, Sam, tell her.
Say, take it easy, Mrs. Croft. You don't have to tell me. Say, you had a fight and broke the glass. Say, that happens in the best regulated families. Don't say I told you, but last week, you know, Mr. Bannerman, the druggist fell on floor, he threw a lamp at Mrs. Bannerman and he busted him.
Get out.
No, Sam, you can't.
Get out, I tell you. Go on out.
Oh,
right away.
I'm going. You're to yell at me. Now you'll pay for that window. Believe me. I'll tell my pa plenty.
Sam, she could have helped us. You threw her out. Why? She could have helped us.
No.
She could have. He let her in.
Stop it.
If you'd have let me tell her, she could have called the neighbors. They'd have...
Oh, stop it, I said. Stop it. He gets restless when you talk so loud.
Sam, why didn't you let her help?
Because, Dora, because, listen, and then don't talk when the cops get up here. The reason she couldn't help us, they can't help us, is it? Don't you understand? He was looking at her all the time, and she was standing right where he's sitting, and yet she didn't see him.
Oh.
You do know what I'm thinking. Maybe no one can see him. But you and me.
Ladies and gentlemen, we leave the visitor from Hades for a short message.
From Erie House.
Step right up and get your ticket here. Just 10 cents. One-tenth of a dollar, and you can see one of the greatest attractions on the Midway. It's bigger than diamonds, better than gold, more exciting than a trip to Mars. Why, it's almost as good as a box full of United States savings bonds. Hurry, 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 right this way.
Almost as good as U.S. savings bonds. Why not?
Yep.
Actually, those were pretty good if you hang on to them. They were actually pretty good.
Yeah. Then they came to a point where one of the series that this is the only one I think they're offered, they never go past the maturation amount. So.
Yeah.
But the
yeah, you have to
ones,
cash them in on time
kept,
instead of hanging on to them. Yep.
Yeah, you hang on to them, you still get the same amount. Where the older bonds, the more you hung on to it, the more interest it would bear.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep. Financial advice from Erie House Radio.
Oh, good. We're going to make everybody as poor as us. Okay.
That's the plan. We're taking you down with us, folks. It's going to be a bumpy ride from here.
Oh, my.
Ride. Yeah.
But at least you'll have fun doing it. You know, that's the important thing.
Yeah.
You know, you may lose every cent you've ever have saved, but at least you'll have a good time doing it. That's what we found.
Especially on Friday and Saturday nights right here. That's all you got to do. Hell, we're free. We're free.
Well, to an extent, yes.
Yes.
As long as my bookie doesn't catch me, we're okay.
Yeah, there you go. It's kind of a chilling story. It's almost like, are they imagining this, or what is the deal? But we'll find out as we wrap up Visitor from Hades from Arch Obler's Plays.
And now back to Arch Obler's story of The Visitor from Hades. A policeman has arrived, a very skeptical policeman.
Now, just a minute, Mr. Croc, or whatever your name is. Let's get this straight. You never put in a call?
Officer, I tell you, look around you.
Oh, are you starting that line again? Mrs. Croc, why don't you tell me what's up?
My wife has nothing to say.
I'm asking her, fella. So you had a little fight with him, huh, lady? Then he got a little rough. You picked up the telephone, you hollered for the police. Is that it, lady? All right. Now, there's something screwy going on up here. I don't know what it is, but I'm waiting for you to tell me. Come on, Croc. It's in your face. Out with it.
You don't see anything?
I see plenty. You and your wife sitting here staring at nothing.
Nothing.
Listen, mister, please. Listen.
I'm listening.
Take out your guns. Shoot him. Kill him.
Huh? Who?
There, in back of you. Quick.
Dora, I beg you.
Hey, mister, what is she talking about?
In back of you. Look. Why don't you look?
Nobody in back of me, lady.
I told you, Dora.
You told her what, Croc? What is this?
I told you. Why don't you listen to me? There. Sitting there, staring at me. At you. Get him out of here.
So, that's it.
You see him. You do. Sammy sees him.
He'll help us. He will. He will.
You will, Sergeant. You will.
Well, sure. Why not?
I told you, Sam.
Yeah, get a doctor over here from Bellevue in a couple of hours.
Bellevue?
Well, take it easy, lady. Nobody's going to hurt you.
Do you think that she's crazy?
Yeah, sure. And I might have guessed it. Yeah, I'll be back in a couple of
hours. No. No, I'm not crazy. Listen to me. He's sitting there watching me, watching Sam. I'm not crazy. I'm telling you it's true. It's true. Oh, why won't you listen? Why won't you listen?
Sam.
What?
What time is it?
About 6, I think.
Getting so dark.
Maybe if we could turn on the lights, he'd be gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, comes from the dark. He can't stand the light. I've got to get to the light switch. I've got to.
No, don't do it, Sam.
But I...
Sam, don't. No, if he touches you...
But I gotta... Floor lamp.
What?
Floor lamp behind us. If I backed up to it, grabbed the switch before...
Oh, careful, Sam.
Just keep looking at him.
Yes.
I got it.
Oh, Sam, the light. No. Still there.
Dora.
What?
Dora. Or is he laughing at us?
Are you asleep?
No, Sam.
Had your eyes shut. It must be almost 6. Yeah, it's getting light. I haven't stayed up all night since I was a kid. Yeah, I was 12, wanted to see what dawn was like, so I stayed up.
Sam.
Huh?
Sam. I figured something out.
Figured?
Hours I've been thinking. Something about his face.
Well?
His mouth. It's just like yours.
Oh, Dora.
No, I'm all right, Sam. I told you. I've just been watching and thinking. Mouth. Just like yours.
Dora, don't.
Don't say anything. Just look. Well?
His eye.
Huh?
I never noticed.
What?
His eyes. Like yours. When you're a crazy man. Look at his eyes. Dora, am I right?
I don't know. All I know is his mouth. When you choked me before. Your teeth.
Were they?
Yes.
Dora.
What?
The way the light shines. The left side of his face.
Huh?
You.
What?
You, when you scream at me. Your skin tight, like a skull. Dora, that side looks like you.
Sam.
I swear it.
No, Sam. Like you.
What? What are you?
The other side of his face. All night I've been trying to figure. Sam, it is like you.
Part you? Me?
Yes.
No. No, it can't be. It isn't sane. It's crazy. It can't be. How can a thing... I tell you, it isn't real. It isn't...
Sam, what's the use yelling it isn't real when it's sitting there?
You're not afraid at all?
No. I don't think I am.
Why?
That thing. Just the worst of you. And the worst of me.
Huh?
Oh, Sam, I'm so tired. Maybe I can't talk straight, but... That thing... Part you when you wanted to kill me, and part me when I wanted you dead. Don't you see?
I think I do.
He's getting up.
Yes.
Looking at me. Sam, I'm getting a little afraid again. Oh, Sam, quickly, before anything happens. Tell me why you've hated me so much.
Well, I...
Tell me, quick.
Well, the last year, I worked so hard, it wasn't enough for you. Never enough. I couldn't figure out why, except you hated me. Why did you, Dora?
I didn't. I only... Yes, I did. Why shouldn't I say it? I've hated you ever since that night you laughed.
Laughed?
Remember? You ought to remember. A kid, you said. Not me. Not in this lousy world. Fill the house with anything you want, but no kids. Never.
So that was it.
That was it.
Why didn't you talk?
Talk? Don't you know yet? All my life, I really feel... I can't. I talk about them inside me. I cry. I hate.
Dora.
Sam.
Gone?
Yes.
How can it be gone?
Sam, go see.
Yes, I will.
Excuse me, Mr. Croc. Pardon you so early, but I saw the light under the floor there, and I heard you talking.
What is it, Superintendent?
Well, nothing, except I was wondering. Last night, my girl, you know, Arlene, she came downstairs with all kinds of crazy talk about you and the missus. You know how kids are. I was wondering. Well, somebody said cops came in the building last night about 9 or 10 o'clock, and I can't figure out where they went. Did they come in here? I mean, did anything happen here last night? Oh, Mrs. Croc, I didn't see you standing there. Well, did anything happen here last night?
Last night?
Yeah. Anything happen?
No, nothing.
Oh. Oh, well, then, excuse me.
No, wait. Wait, Superintendent.
Huh?
Wait. There is something.
Huh?
There's a couple of windows to be fixed.
Arch Obler again. First, my thanks to Lorene Tuttle and Bill Phipps, with Paula Winslow, Peggy Weber, Hal Perry, Jerry Hausner, and Byron Kane. Sound man, Bud Tollefson. Now a word about our next radio theater adventure. Have you ever thought about falling through the air, say 10,000 feet, without a parachute? Have you ever had one of those falling dreams where you... But more about that after a commercial word.
Some of us think Connecticut is a suburb of New York City, but it isn't really. It just seems that way because so many people working in the city commute daily between their jobs and the grassy country-like atmosphere of Stamford, Greenwich, or Larchmont. Those who don't commute, preferring to work where they live, may 9 to 5 it at the Electric Boat Division of General Dynamics in New London, selling insurance in Hartford, or making clocks in Bristol. But regardless of where they work, both groups of people have a great deal in common. They don't share merely the nutmeg or constitution state, for the place of their residence is shared with others, such as P.T. Barnum, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Nathan Hale, Noah Webster. People in Connecticut today share the yearly excitement of the Yale-Harvard crew races, the beauty of the mountain laurel blossom in late spring, pride in their state's early Yankee peddlers, and more than anything, the true meaning of their state motto, "He who transplanted sustains."
We were talking about falling dreams because next week I've written you a play titled Special to Hollywood. It concerns an actress I once knew and an airplane I never want to know. Actress and airplane, you and I will, I hope, meet next broadcast time. Arch Obler's Plays. Stories of the unusual. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Dun, dun, dun.
For those of you who would like to hear that program that Arch Obler was talking about, that is an episode called Special to Hollywood. And you can catch that on Erie House Radio, broadcast number 125. And it had Howard Duff on the, he was the pilot on that particular plane that Arch Obler didn't want to ever see.
And that so, there you go. 2017, I think, no? Maybe or 20, early 18?
2017, yes, you are very good. November 25th, we were celebrating Howard Duff's birthday.
Howard Duff.
Good old Howard Duff. The greatest radio Sam Spade ever. But
yes, indeed
there's
still, he was.
All that lesson that we learned from that Arch Obler tale, there still might be something that we can learn.
Seems possible. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story.
With apologies to Gar, this one comes to us sort of from a Ben Franklin quote. Visitors from Hades are like fish. After 3 days, they eat you. Okay, there you go.
Eeny, meeny, chili beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
There we go.
Could have messed up a makeup job with just one switch there.
There you go.
Kind of what I was shooting for.
Yeah.
The devil.
Coming up in just under 12 minutes here, you got Gar the Ghoul on Twitch with his weekly show. And But we still have a few minutes left here for Erie House Radio, Dale.
Oh, we ain't done with you yet, folks. Nuh-uh.
He wanted to invent tough beer. Okay. Oh, my. Good old Bob is hot tonight.
Yes.
What can I say?
How about a little wheel? Wheel over here.
A little wheel. All right. Well, you know, why don't you get up there and spin that wheel?
Because I'm tired. All right, I'll do it. Here we go.
Around and around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
I hide my
time now to introduce a young man who for many years was a very important figure with the Chicago Light Opera Company. When the opera was over, he turned out the lights. Here he is, Doodles Weaver, as Professor Fiedelbaum.
Thank you. Thank you. It is great once again to be near you. So I shall romanticize on this thought and sing Francis Craig's bestseller, Near You. I believe I'm in voice. Yes, I am in voice. And now, maestro, may we have Near You, if you please. There's just one place for me, and everyone tells me to go there.
No, no.
Seems like I made a mistake. There's just one place for me near you. It's Hike Levin, it's like heaven to be. Year new, New Year, New Year, New Year, Happy New Year, whoopee, whoopee. No, 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 no. Too late again. Pays when we're a dart. Where's my apple cart? I'm off to an awful start. Days when we're apart, I can't face the music. I can't face it. I can't face about face. Left face. No, right face. Wrong face. Any face. No. Sound like a sergeant. You know, reminds me of a few years ago, a man came up to me and said, "Say, buddy, why aren't you in the army?" I said, "What, with the war going on?" Now, days when we're apart, I can't face my heart. Say you'll never stay more than just 2 miles away. More than just 2 feet away. Not 2 feet, no, no. More than just 2 hands, 2 toes. No, 2 ears. 2 by 4. No, 2 for the price of 1. T for 2. No, no. Stick around, won't you? If my hours could be spent, year boo, year new, blear who, close, I'd be a moron. I'd be a moron in content. A moron? No, no, no. Maybe I am. No. I'd be a contented cow near you. No. A cow? Did you hear about the cow that drank blue milk and mooed indigo? Isn't that bully? I got no beef coming. Now, make my life worthless. No. Make my life worthwhile by telling me off. No, no. By telling me that I'll spend the rest of my dough on you. Spend my life in a rest home near you. No, no. Not a rest home, a home rest. No, no, a home run. No, a home stretch. A home stretch. And there they go around the outside. It looks like little Trajan in front, winning Warbling in second, Linda Lee third, and Assault is passing battery. Assault and battery. That's the rest of my life near you.
Jeez.
Yep.
He's in perfect Doodles. Tune. Yep.
Doodles. What do you expect from a guy named Doodles? You know, speaking of funny names, last night our Casey crime photographer, that is like the perfect name for a journalist, a photojournalist, Stotts. Stotts.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great name.
Yep.
It fits the era.
It does, yeah, but yeah, good old Casey crime photography. You missed it last night. Go, it's still there waiting for you. They're all there waiting for you. All 3,427. Well, not that many, but a lot of shows there.
Tonight is 589, so we're chugging along.
Wow, 589. Yeah. That's a lot of shows.
That's a lot of shows.
Shows, yep. Yep. So, do we have time to slide in a quick song here or not?
Well, I couldn't wait.
All right, here's a wooden nickel.
I was waiting. You think I'm putting my money in there? Hell no. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, now, we hope that we'll include your favorite song in our little broadcast tonight, and we're going to start off with a brand new Columbia recording of ours that we understand is getting a little popular throughout the country. It's called Moonlight Swim. Let's go on a moonlight swim, which we always do whenever we finish here. I mean, every night when we finish at midnight, we don't walk back, back to the thing. We swim back. That's right. And everybody that's here at the steel pier at that time must go in the water with us. See, we all swim back together. So here it is, our latest Columbia recording called Moonlight Swim with the Cadets and Barry Frank.
Swim, swim, swimming beneath the moon. Swim, swimming beneath the moon.
Let's go on a moonlight swim. Far away from the crowd, all alone upon the beach. Our lips and our arms close within each other's reach.
Swim, swimming beneath the moon.
On a moonlight swim.
Swim, swimming beneath the moon.
Let's go on a moonlight swim.
Swimming beneath the moon.
Do the last we can race that for just a little while. I'll sit and pretend that you're on a desert
island. Swim, swimming beneath the moon.
On a moonlight
swim. Swimming beneath the moon.
The air is cold with kisses oh so sweet. I'll keep you warm, so very warm. From head to feet. Let's go on a moonlight swim.
Swimming beneath the moon.
We're in love and above there's a crazy gold balloon that sits winking down and inviting us to come on in.
Swim, swimming beneath the moon.
On a moonlight
swim. Swimming beneath the moon.
Yes, it was all a bad dream.
It was a bad swim there. Okay. So, Dale, what's happening on Erie House Radio next week?
Not a thing. Fold them up the tent.
Oh, okay.
Nah, that does it. No more. No more Erie House in February, because it'll be March when we come back. Sticking in the horror genre, it had to be spiders. So we got all kinds of Shadow coming back. General Motors on Safari, Hall of Fantasy.
Yep.
And finally, the return of CBS Radio Mystery Theater on Saturday.
Ooh, yeah. Good scary. Good scary. That's I think it's another Bob Juren story there, Dale.
Ooh, you know, that's going to be a good one.
Yep. Pretty sure that's Bob Druid's story, so we ought to look forward to that and everything else and all the ones we've already had in the past. Go into the archives. They're all there, and they're all there for you.
Yep, and now it's time to pay the bills.
Who do you like that? Who do you like that? Pepsi Cola, it's the pot. 12 ounces, that's a lot. Twice as much for a nickel, too. Pepsi Cola is the drink for you. Nickel,
Is the drink for you. Is the drink for you.
Ta-da.
Is there another one?
Yeah. And we want to thank Fogs Bane and good old Bob for joining us live as Gar the Ghoul had to split. So he's going to start up in just, I'd say about 37 seconds or so. Thanks for joining us here on Erie House Radio. Say goodnight, Dave.
Good night, Dave.
We'll be back next Friday at 8:30 Eastern.
Didn't think I was listening.
The castle lights are growing dim.
I did.
There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
It's all a bad dream. A very, very bad dream.
Yep, you're out. We're out.
There we go.
So did you enjoy my interview with the demon?
I loved your interview with the demon. That was cool. I was like, what is he saying? It took me a while to figure out it was intended to be gibberish.
Yep. Yeah, demons speak in gibberish usually, you know? That's one thing you got to learn.
It's not an easy task. It's not.
I thought different ways to do it.
It's hard to do it and stay consistent with it, or it always has been for me.
Yeah. I thought about different ways to do that. I thought gibberish really was the best way. So you'd be far more expressive with a than you can with any kind of word. So
yeah, it does hit the spot.
I think I got to clean off my microphone now.
Yeah, wash that thing.
Yep.
How many times have I told you to wash that thing? All right. That was fun.
Interesting show. Looking forward to our shows next week. And one of them's from South Africa. I've been getting into a lot of South Africa programs lately. For one thing, the South African programs, they didn't have television until about 1972, so they relied upon radio for their entertainment until that time. And it's interesting. There's a lot more spy stories and things like that. But, you know, they even did versions of British shows as well as American shows. I'm listening to, I just found 44 of the Suspense from South Africa. I'd seen 8 of them before, and none of these seem to have titles. I've recognized one. And they have some interesting stories in there. High Adventure, I think, is another series they have. We got a couple coming up in the not-so-distant future, at least one coming up in the not-too-distant future.
Yeah.
And just there's some, they really do it now. They do their own Sam Spade. And you try and compare that. I mean, I wouldn't even compare that to Sam Dunn. Yeah, he took over for Howard Duff. But Howard Duff, he's just untouchable in there. But I have one of my volunteers who's from South Africa. And so every day I send him a radio play from South Africa. He gets a big kick out and then shares it with his family. So
neat. That is cool. That is way cool. I just wonder if your...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I wonder if your recent interest, too, is... with your knowledge, in your experience, you know, you've been into old-time radio for a long, long time, long before we ever dreamed of Erie House Radio.
Yes.
And this is like more fresh stories for you. This is, you know what I mean? You've heard over the years, I imagine,
yeah,
a great deal of the stuff we've heard here and things that are, you know, not as frequently played now or listened to.
Yes.
Where this is fresher
every
for you.
Every once in a while, I find a series over here that kind of tickles me that I didn't know existed. Thanks to the internet, we can find some of these things now.
Yeah.
It doesn't cost us an arm and a leg, where the South Africa stuff was really all new to me, except for the creaking door and the police cars. Squad cars. I'm sorry, squad cars is what it was called. And they're very interesting and very mirthful, the creaking door. And again, that's what Hyman Brown wanted to call the Inner Sanctum Mysteries to begin with. His sponsor didn't like the title, but he liked Inner Sanctum Mysteries, so he went with that. And so interesting, they're not stories that were from Inner Sanctum. A lot of the Australian versions of our shows were actually syndicated, in a sense, to the scripts there, and they would have their local actors do it. The Fat Man, and there's more of those survive than our American version on ABC. Yeah, even though I like J. Scott Smart better, there's only like a handful of those that are available, where there's, you know, probably a couple dozen of the Australia version. And they had Australian versions of several of our programs. The Shadow, there's only a few of those that are kind of circulating here, but they keep unearthing more of the South African productions, which is kind of cool, because sometimes they're speaking very American and sometimes they're speaking very British.
Blimey.
One's about a Brooklyn cab driver. It's a comedy that they do. And it sounds very Brooklyn. So actors there, I think, would have to be really talented to not only wipe out their accent, but to even give it a Brooklyn one, I think is amazing.
It is. And like you said, thanks to the magic of the internet, we can find and share these great tales from all around the globe.
Yeah, I found one of those suspense ones I was telling you. It doesn't have a name. I'll name it Playing with Ghosts. It's a great ghost story. And we'll be sharing that down the road for sure at some point. But
we're going to get them all.
Yep, eventually.
Sorry, Dave. We're going to have to make ourselves live long.
To 247 years old.
Yeah.
By then we may run out.
We played that one back in 2040. What are you doing? I said no repeat, damn it.
What the hell?
It's not Halloween.
So much fun. Great stories. You know what? Arch Obler really wasn't. The Arch Obler one really was an eerie story. He was so good at that.
He was. I have become a huge fan of Arch Obler, and not just from radio. Some of his movies, you know, some of them were really low budget, like that 3D film he made. Maybe the 3D part was expensive, but I don't think the rest was.
No, and the Twonky, that wasn't he had a way of making it and come in under budget. Well, Hans Conried starred in that, and he was mostly known for his radio work, so I'm sure that didn't cost him an arm and leg. And then who wouldn't want to work with Arch Obler and something he would do? I mean, he did. But Lauren, that one we had, Visitor from Hades, there were three names I recognized from old radio. One was Lorraine Tews, who was Lorraine Tuttle, who was Effie on the Sam Spade program, the secretary. And then, of course, Hal Perry, who was the original and longest-running Great Gildersleeve. And I'm trying to think. There was a third name, too, and I lost it off the top of my head what that name was. But those were three big names from the golden age of radio that were working with him there. And amazing, brilliant mind, up until even into the Mutual Radio Theater, when he had written some stories that they were producing. Matter of fact, one of them I have in there for like the Big Cats or something like that, and it's about one of his trips to an African lion safari that he wrote and actually acted in throughout the program, which made it even that much more special to me. You've also got one that he wrote for election time of something like Bad Politicians or something like that of a weekend I have worked up. And he wrote a story, called Vicious Circle. And just really,
Vicious
really,
yep.
So, you know, it's what an amazing guy. And he finally, even though there wasn't a lot of money, it finally settled into the fact that, he was made for radio.
Yes, he was.
Like Rod Serling said, he thought radio was a total waste except for two things. Norman Corwin and Arch Obler were the only two things that he thought really was innovative in radio.
Yeah, we got to do a Rod Serling. And what was that? You came up with a great idea for August.
We were honoring Ray Bradbury for Ray Bradbury's birthday weekend in August 19th and 20th. The 20th is his birthday. We've got some wonderful Ray Bradbury stories we haven't shared yet. So,
yep. And lest we forget, his two partners in crime from the Bat Pack, Forrest J. Ackerman and Ray Harryhausen. These guys were all three of our heroes of mine.
And all the different genres of the media as well.
Yeah, they went kind of, although they had that common interest of starting that early science fiction club way back in 1939. Ray went into the creation of the monsters for movies, and Flory was collecting everything, and of course Ray Bradbury became a very prolific science fiction, horror, and just general writer.
Yes, and it would amaze you, some of the stories. Well, it's just like every once in a while you get something comes out of Stephen King that isn't something that's meant to scare you out of your skin. And you say, how can that be Stephen King? Well, it's because he can write other things, too. It's most profitable to write the scary stuff. But it's nice to see him write something else once in a while. And it's the same with Ray Bradbury.
Yeah, it's funny because when you're reading one of those that King does, you're waiting. Yeah. When's it coming? It never comes.
And it never comes, right.
Or it's a different kind of a real horror. Like I watched his movie 1922, and it was more of somebody's conscience bothering him than anything supernatural.
Okay,
but still creepy.
That can be very horrific too, though. Your own conscience.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see these guys go into other genres as well, so, and we'll explore a little bit of that with Ray Bradbury. So,
yep. Well, give our brother Gar my best if you're headed on over there to Switch Twitchland. I'm gonna get the hooter outside.
Hoot hoot. Well, with that. And before you take the hooter out, we better turn on the three spotlights, and in walks the James Durante.
Two of them gotta be for his nose.
Good night. Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What for this sake but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Horrible up we the thing, and it could think a do. Good night. Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Thank you.